Here's Andrew.
Welcome to A Course in Miracles. Hey, Barbara. Good to see you.
Please take notes.
Yes, this is a required course. That's good, Tim. Please take notes. This is a required course. Required course because... But the, you know, you've all came for, the bottom line is, what we're studying is the truth. We have to study what the truth is, because we recognize that we are deeply invested in lies, or, you know, falsity. And you kind of have to admit that, you know, the falsity that you've been going along with, body, time, space, ego, it's got its benefits. It's got its attraction. At the very least, it has a lot of support in every direction. And so, for you to do this work, for you to pursue the truth, you are pursuing what appears to be wrong. You see, the world's going along the way it's going along because it has friends and support. Hatred, judgment, defense of the body, making the body safer and better, differences being manifest and then supported, praised. Choose a side. These are all things of the world. They're not sins. There's nothing wrong with them. They're just not love. They're just not the truth. There's nothing wrong with the world. Really. So, yeah, some things about it relatively suck and some things are relatively great. But this is not for you to make a distinction. What's good about the world? What's not good about the world? This is not for you to make the distinction. Because you are now embarking on the truth. The world does not qualify as the truth. Nothing that you can see or hear or describe in detail is the truth. On your spiritual journey, this is why it appears to be wrong. The spiritual path appears to be wrong. And yet, if you're on this path, and all of you are, something has touched you that says, whoa, it's completely backwards. What appears to be right is wrong, and what appears not even to appear is right. So, you know, here you are. Welcome to Crazy Talk. Welcome to our Thursday night Crazy Talk. But now that I have pursued this, the extent that I have, it touches my heart and my mind in the same way like nothing on the earth ever has. We're going to do some more of that tonight. I mean, look at the other people on the screen. He did not come here to chat. Nobody came here to chat. People came here to join. People came here to get present. People came here to awaken. People came here to follow this inkling that is beyond words. That's why we're here. That's why this little book exists. Because it's describing something invisible. It's going against everything that the world's supporting. And I'm really glad that we're all here to support each other to do this. What we're doing is embarking on bringing truth, awareness of truth. or awareness of eternity into a frame of time. It's impossible. And yet, because of what you actually are, it is inevitable. If you simply are willing to let go of the addiction of differences, just for a moment, I'm not asking you to throw out the whole world. No need. No need. This is a blast. We're having a freaking blast. Look, here's an example. Okay, this one billionaire from this planet decided to launch this sports car into space. That's how you have fun. He's having a, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's more, right? This is just a toy. This is the whole idea. It's crazy. It's wild. This is, am I looking the right way? I can't tell. I'm looking at the newscast. This is fun. It's a blast. It's not true. And it will not speak to you here now. Now that you've embarked on a spiritual journey, you must recognize this, that now that you've embarked on a spiritual journey, your priorities have changed. Now that you've embarked on a spiritual journey, the bar has raised for what peace feels like, what joy feels like, what truth feels like. You see, before you embark on a spiritual journey, then you like I did. I've studied science and I studied machinery, and I tripped into mathematics when I was younger, and I thought, wow, math. Now, finally, something that's really satisfying is math. You know, you can solve to zero and you can divide something exactly in half, and it's kind of fun. Or in thirds. What's it like to divide it into eighths? Well, let me see. I have to work on that. It's really fun. Before your spiritual journey, it's really fun. I have great relationships, sports cars. Or three. It was really fun. But the perspective has changed. Somehow, I don't know, you know, I'm still wondering how anybody actually goes from the fascination of this planet inward. We've all done it. Everybody here somehow has done it. I don't know if it's from something so bad happens or something so good happens miraculously in a satsang. You go, that's it. Probably both. But the bottom line is you all have made that you have had a spiritual awakening. Everybody here has had a spiritual awakening. You can't stand this talk in this book if you haven't at least had some spiritual awakening. And so there's a light now in you. A door has opened in a dark place from which you saw a light, and it got more of your attention than anything in that dark place ever did. Somehow, some way. Everybody here has had at least a small spiritual awakening. You can't forget it. If we had a newcomer here, I would speak to them as the hope that they have, and they don't know where it comes from. But I think everybody here is beyond that. Everybody here has actually had a holy instant. Everybody here has actually had a moment where you gave up on the ego and you felt so much relief. And then you felt love. And it was like, wow, what just happened? I'm on board for more of that. Everybody here has done that. So in the section we're reading tonight, that's what reason is. Reason is how you look upon things from a perspective of, say, oneness. Before you did your spiritual journey, probably didn't even occur to you the idea of oneness. There's just a whole bunch of things, and there's more things. Then you look out in space, and there's even more things. So I don't know what this oneness thing is, but there's a lot more than one. Hell, I got 10 fingers. What one? What do we need math for if there's only one? Get out of here. See, all self-proving, depending on your frame of reference. Depending on your logical frame of reference. And there's only two. Hey, Jason, welcome. There's only two. Hi, Cecilia. There's only two. There's only two. Material is one. And spiritual is the other. That's it. There's only two frames of reference. And so we, tonight, are going to travel together on some pieces of A Course in Miracles. We're going to follow from this little book where a part of your mind has somehow, I could say it's miraculous, somehow a part of the mind that was completely devoted to separation has discovered unity and then surrendered to unity and then manifested unity back to the separate perspective. And that piece of your mind that did all that, we call Jesus. It's just a word. But some people need to think of it as a guy. He was a guy. Took the form of a guy like everybody, every other person. But it was mind. It's all in mind. And so the healing has actually already happened. The healing of the two-ness back to the truth of oneness. Two-ness is impossible. If you thought you had two, it was the one looking like two. Or it was the one with two parts. Fine. Still one. It's the one with a gazillion parts. Still one. Simple, 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 simple. This is what we shall study tonight. It is a miracle, isn't it? That whole thought of oneness. You know, when everything just continues to prove two or more, it is a miracle that you can hold somehow and comfortably oneness. So, tell you what, to get started, why don't we spend a few minutes and I just think about oneness. Take a few quiet moments to invite your Holy Spirit to come around. And let's reflect on oneness. Bing! You who appear to be separate, you who appear to be inquiring about oneness, are oneness, appearing to acquire oneness. Let that circle get very small. Bing. You know, I have to do that. If I use my bell, Zoom recognizes it as noise and cuts it off. Would anybody like to comment about oneness before we jump in to some more oneness?
I will.
Okay, Luann, what do you got?
What I got was a feeling of it, a really strong feeling of it. But so then I went, because feelings have a thought behind them, theoretically. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find a thought. Just a feeling. And that's the first time this ever happened to me, that I have a feeling that I couldn't find the thought behind it.
Wow. Wow. Luann, mm-hmm. That is a journey beyond words.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Don't question it. Don't look for the thought.
Okay.
That is a gift you gave yourself. Open-mindedness can take a journey beyond words. Trust can take a journey beyond words. Faith can take a journey beyond words.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I feel good that you told me that because I had no idea what was going on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I came up with an immediate block from the concept of words.
You're kind of quiet, Jason. You lean into your microphone. You came into an immediate block.
Yeah, I came into a block that said, well, you know, you're trying to use words and thought systems of this realm, you know, in a body, and you just can't cut it. Because I thought there's the self, and the opposite of that is total, but even total isn't big enough to describe what God is.
Yeah. Good. Good. Well, you know, that's certainly in the right direction because you were abandoning even the word total. You know, the words that came up, you could feel the distinctions. And you said, nope, nope, nope. And so you're very, very close. You're very close because you're rejecting these smaller, less reaching ideas. You stay with that. I mean, I only gave you 5 minutes. I think another couple of minutes, you might have been able to abandon the idea of trying to see oneness. You see, there's no perception in oneness, right? There's a knowing. Tricky now. This is a very fine point. We're not going to spend a lot of time right now. We might actually. There's a section. We might get to a place we can have Jesus describe it for us. But you really have to allow the certainty, the obviousness of oneness. Rather than seeing it or analyzing it, it's a surrender to the truth. It's an undoing of everything you know that really comes from perception. That's one of the characteristics of the duality and the addiction of being separate in a body and such, is that you can analyze and see it and describe it, and then you have it. When you have a holy instant, then the all-encompassing nature of the truth becomes present. It is a journey beyond words.
Yeah, Andrew?
Yes.
So I was, when I was meditating on oneness, it occurred to me that it has to be in that moment. I was in the present. And it's the only place where I can really love, you know, because the moment that I separate, I go outside of that and I see the other, then that's where the judgment comes in and the separation. So just to hold that oneness in the present moment, I, you know, felt that, yeah, this is where I need to be anytime that I'm feeling the separation and the judgment and the chaos and, you know, just to come back to that place where I can hold everything in love. It's the only place where love can exist.
Oh, that's it.
Oneness.
That's it, Cecilia. That's it.
Yeah.
You see, the present moment, first of all, in order for you to go into the present moment, you don't do something. You actually stop doing. This is how amazingly achievable it is that it is not an accomplishment that you do. It's the result of stopping doing everything else. Because the present always is. And your focus on the future or your focus on the past, that is your dreaming or your guilt, that takes effort. It takes effort for you to picture the future or to picture the past. It does not take effort to be present. Yes, I get it. It's really hard for you to sit still and quiet your mind. I get all that. But when you do, you will recognize that when you finally reach a moment of presence, it's not for something you did. It's something you stopped doing. How hard can that be to not do? And beautiful, Cecilia, because that means that no matter where you are or what you're doing or what's happening in your life or appears to be happening to you, if you get accustomed to stopping, being able to stop and do nothing for an instant, you instantly return to the fullness of the present where you knew love, as you just described. This is what I call a doorway out of the illusion. And it's inward, and it's present, and it's from an undoing, not a doing. That's what makes it so absolutely achievable. Beautiful, Cecilia, beautiful. You can never now be more than one thought away from peace. And you know who has to, you know, if you're having lots of thoughts, you know who's doing it. Ross, what do you got?
So you said do nothing. And so my mantra to go into oneness is, I am not a body. I am free, for I am still as God created me. Well, suddenly it just struck me that, I always thought, I remain as God created me, was how I interpreted it. And all of a sudden it struck me, well, it's both. It's also still, which is do nothing. So that one word has that, that meaning of being still.
Yes.
And so,
bravo.
I don't know if anybody else stumbled over that, but I just didn't see it for the longest. It just hit me like, I don't know, a week ago that it's, and of course, when I do that, it's, I am not a body. And then I fill in, okay, I am the Son of God. I am, you know, the Christ. I am spirit. And then I am free. I am free of time and space. But I never did much with the other. I just thought it was, I remain as God created me. That's enough. Well, wait a minute. That little word still.
I think I read the course the first way you described for, I don't know, many years. And then 1 year, you bet. It just dawned on me. Wait a minute.
Yeah. And then I started hearing, you know, listening to the audiobook, I started hearing, oh, yeah, there's that word still again. Oh, there it is again. He yes. utilizes that. In yes. various places in the course, and yet I just missed it. Like, I guess you did too.
Yeah.
Everybody else found that just like, oh, still do nothing.
Yeah. There's a lesson that says I will be still an instant and go home.
Yeah.
Like, what a clue.
Anyway.
Thank you, Ross.
It's fun.
It's a doorway. Somehow allowing yourself, even just for an instance, all it takes, to just surrender. And you find out you're not dead. You're giving up everything you think is keeping you alive by going perfectly still in your mind. And you're not. You're not dead.
I have a kind of a question. Maybe it's more like a confirmation. So the time that I felt nothing but love and whiteness, white all around me, light, white, and nothing but love in that white through me, you know, everywhere, was when I wanted to send love to my brother, and I couldn't do it because doing. I couldn't do it. And I said to the Holy Spirit, would you please do this for me? I can't do it. And I went almost numb. And then all that light came. Now, I've always thought of that as a holy instant. And then you tell me that feeling nothing but feeling oneness is a holy instant. How do I get those two together? Because I didn't feel like I was loving everybody in that oneness. I just felt one with them.
Oh, you know, you could describe it so many ways, but a holy instant is simply a miniature of heaven. It's a miniature of understanding. That's all it is.
Okay.
It's not even special at all. And if you were somehow to abandon Luann as the one who's going to communicate or experience love, you could have a holy instant on that sudden recognition that Luann could never actually experience love because she's a character in a dream. And boom, there's the love you were always looking for because you got out of the way.
Yeah, I got out of the way.
That's a holy instant. Let me explain it this way. You'll have, there's only one holy instant because it is a abiding in the truth. And you recognize it every time, and you'll never get sick of it because it is a completion and an actually accessing light. Okay. But because you are so busy in unholy instances and separation and duality, then each time you're so cold, and each time you come near the heat, it's like, oh my God, that feels good. Right? You're so far in the cold with your body and your investment in separation that each time you come near oneness, it's like, wow.
Okay.
And it always will be because of what you actually are, which is an extension of God. And so anytime you take a moment to go look at source, you will find like the warmth of heat, and it will be just a little more than when you were looking away from source. So you will never, ever, ever get accustomed to stopping and turning back to the truth. It will never happen. The truth will always appear to be more comforting than any other exercise of mind you can possibly have.
Okay.
And there are some great exercises of mind. And they'll get higher and higher as you proceed. But there's nothing like turning back to the source, ever. It's a wonderful, wonderful gift. It's a gift of love.
Well, when you said I had a moment of open-mindedness.
Yes.
What it felt like was, I don't have to. It felt like absolute peace is what it felt like.
Yes.
Because there was nobody or nothing that I'm not one with, so I don't have to fight anything.
That's it. You bet. Very, very simple. Very, very simple.
But that doesn't, I didn't feel like I was loving everybody.
No, no. That's a whole bunch of work. Well, you would have to get specific. Let me explain it this way.
As soon as I say loving everybody else, I'm not one anymore. Okay.
Yeah. What if you miss somebody?
Like myself.
Yeah. What if you miss somebody down in New Zealand? One of these tribal people you didn't even know about. Oh, you blew it. Yeah. No, oneness is absolutely a non-linear experience. But the way we go about it, and the way we will tonight as well, is the triad of A Course in Miracles is first you look at something. And in this case, we'll be looking a little bit, if we get to it, we'll be looking at your brother, the whole idea of another person. You look at that concept, that idea, and you're open to looking at it differently. A shift in perception. That's a miracle. A shift in the way you were looking, you drop it and you look at it a new way. This is a miracle. Because it is a way that is lighter, a way that is true versus dark and heavy and divisive. So it's a miracle, a shift in perception. But that's not enough. The miracle is not enough. It's just willingness. once you have a shift in perception about your brother or about, who knows, doesn't matter, anything. And you find a little light, see, where there was darkness, now there's light. A little shift happens. Now work begins. The work of A Course in Miracles really begins. Why? The miracle was actually given to you. The miracle is done through you by your Holy Spirit. Once you open, when you make yourself available and willing, the Holy Spirit came in and showed you something differently, showed you some compassion, showed you how somebody is actually seeking for love, where the ego says, no, they're attacking you. And then somehow, some way, you said, well, it's not really personal. They're just really afraid. Boom. Compassion came in. You don't even know from where. But that's a miracle, a shift in perception. But now the work begins. What's the work? The work is forgiveness. The work is number two in the triad. Number one in the triad is a miracle. Number two in the triad is the actual work of A Course in Miracles, and that's forgiveness. Forgiveness means letting go of your separate thinking. Forgiveness means actually choosing to live as though you're not an ego. The miracle shows you another way to not have the burden that required you to suffer. Forgiveness says, well, I'm not going to suffer now. I don't have to. I'll stop swearing. I'll stop judging. I'll stop doing all these things that I used to do with my words and my beliefs and my deeds that follow wrong thinking. That's forgiveness. But it's work, and it could take a long time to get over some of these habits. But when you do, and something divisive shows up in your life, but you've already done the work because you went through the workbook maybe. And you said, oh, that's just my ego. And you feel happy when you could feel really, really mad. You didn't. That's a holy instant. You breathe a breath of relief when a problem in the world presents, but you just instantly let it go because it wasn't real anymore. You didn't even have to forgive it. You felt a lighter sense of being, right? Everybody's been there. Everybody here in this group. You found yourself not worrying about something that you used to worry about. And you had a lighter sense of being. That's why I love that word, enlightenment. I love it. That's the holy instant. And what's really happening is you're re-educating or rewiring your mind back toward the truth of what you are. Away from abiding and separation, and now you're abiding back toward oneness. You've taken another step up the staircase. You've had another spiritual awakening. You've had more empowerment of your mind. And so now, if you got your Course in Miracles going on, you actually have a guide that will remind you all through the day to take whatever has a contraction. Anything comes up, whatever comes up during the day has a contraction. You say, whoop, Holy Spirit, show me the miracle here. And then it shows you a shift in perception, like we'll look at tonight. And then you'll go about your way saying, well, I will no longer punish myself now that I know that this was just an ego trap. My judgment on this person, on this act, on this deed was an ego trap. And I see it as a trap and I don't want to follow it anymore. What a sense of freedom is that? But that's forgiveness. And then when you recognize you never have to follow it again, you never have to swear like that again, you never have to argue with that person again about doing that thing ever again because you're free. Wow, that's the holy instant. And this is how we take steps in our spiritual awakening with A Course in Miracles as a guide. At first, they're really slow steps and they're surprising and they're difficult, but they're incremental. But then suddenly you find that a few of these are whoppers that go back half your life. Mm-hmm. And you feel like, wait a minute. And then you recognize when somebody asks you, does A Course in Miracles work? You say, How could you even ask me that? Yes. I have a peace now that passes understanding. I don't even know when it happened, you might say. Because you're healing, see? You're healing from a devotion to separation, and you're working your way back up, as the Course calls it, the ladder that the ego led you down. Slowly, incrementally, not too much as to scare you, but enough to really make you feel confident that there is a better way. And it is within your own choice to make it and to do it. You are not alone. You're not helpless. Your goal is love. Your goal is light. The reward is joy and true sharing that the ego could never accomplish. That's why we do this. That's where it goes. Well, let's have Jesus weigh in. Everybody turn to page 4, 6, what was that, Luann?
I don't know what the third part of the triangle is.
The third part of the triad is the holy instant.
Oh, okay. I put that with the first with the second one.
The first one is a miracle, shift in perception.
Oh, yeah, the purple, but I put it with forgiveness as the second one.
Second one's forgiveness. You stop your stinking thinking. That's work. It could take a long time. The habit is the thoughts that keep coming up and making things difficult. The rehearsing of suffering, telling people your story, or trying to give people the type of ego compassion, and you get drawn into their story. You start to feel sorry for them. Ooh, you're right back into ego. You're not forgiving. But the holy instant is when you recognize it's done and you're free. You're truly free. It's a beautiful, beautiful triad. This is the work in the dogma of A Course in Miracles. Yes. And you start to generalize as you go along, and it gets bigger and faster and deeper. And pretty soon you can start to do the work for somebody else. I think that might be in tonight's reading. I forget now. But you actually, it sounds crazy, right? But if it's all one mind, of course it's the truth. But you start to do the work for other people. I know, sounds crazy, but you do. There aren't other people. Emily.
Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Emily.
I was just wanting to... I was in this group of people on massage tables doing healing work, and I was being the one on the table receiving. And someone on another table had an experience, and I think they were crying, but it sounded like they were having a difficult time anyways. And my first sensation that came to me was, they're not separate. I felt unified with all of the people, the bodies, including my body, in the room. And something about that experience really drove home to me that this unified feeling that I had with this person wasn't disturbing. There was nothing about it that was disturbing. Something nice. Shifted that. Yes. Normally, I would have just wanted to get off the table, find out what was going on, do what I need to do to help that person. None of that happened.
Wow.
And everything just sort of shift, you know, just kept being, I just kept being present.
Very good. Now, I don't know if this ever works. Nobody's ever given me any feedback on this analogy, so I just keep using it. I hope that I lock up. I hope you guys will speak up. Emily, so what happened, you beautifully described, was a joining of sameness came through, and a recognition of differences or a pursuit of differences fell away. And the truth is sameness. The truth is oneness. So it has much more support. It goes much deeper, and it feels way different. And so the crazy analogy that I use is that if you go down to Hollywood and you go to Studio B in a row of A, B, C, D, it's just a big box, right? And they got cameras in there, and they got lights. And at 11 a.m., they're filming a woman hanging off of a parasol floating down called Mary Poppins. And she's going to float down through the sky. She's singing. Oh, my God, it's wonderful. And she's going to help out everybody at 11 a.m. But at about 4 p.m., the Mary Poppins crew packs up and goes out the back door, and in from the front door comes another crew. But the cameras are up, the lights are up, the stage, and they don't need that umbrella. They got chainsaws and crowbars, and they're going to film a horror movie. Oh, my God, right? But wait a minute. If you just back up like you did and just look at the oneness of everything, judgment is not necessary. Camera same, building the same. Before we had a singing woman coming down to help everybody out of the sky. I love it. Angelic. And now we have people pursuing. There's just people pursuing entertainment. Mary Poppins is not real. He cannot fly on an umbrella. The chainsaw is not real. They're not going to kill anybody. The umbrella is not real. Mary Poppins is actually being voiced over by a better singer, so she's not even singing. The chainsaw is not actually have any gas in it. That's done with post-production sound. And that's what I think you did. I think you, even though that person sounded like they're in agony, somehow you allowed the oneness and the presence of being to experience agony on this table and simplicity on your table. And that's the truth. You see, suffering is not true. Loss is not true, and loss is not possible. The Course sums it up with one word. It's a small word. It's only three letters, but it's throughout the whole book. And once you get this, you're like, wow, he talks about this a lot. No wonder he shortened it so the book doesn't get longer. What is this little three-letter word that describes loss, suffering, death, separation? Little three-letter word. I think he was just saving ink. He was like, really? This is why Jesus chose the word sin. There is no sin. He says, look, there's no sin. I know you think there is. And for a moment, Emily, there was no sin. There was just one person over there, you know, a part of mind living and expressing. And then there was your mind. But you went a level underneath it. Yes. Yes. Masako. Hold on. I got your mute. Hang on a second. And Masako, you're up.
Oh, sorry. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Happy New Year, by the way, Andrew.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, another thing, Luann, your hair looks fabulous. Okay. All right. So a while ago, you said we can actually do the work for other people. I wonder if you can elaborate on that.
Yes. Well, I hope we get to the passage where Jesus describes it tonight. That would be great. What happens, Masako, is you start to recognize that there actually is not another person who is separate and struggling with oneness. There is one idea of person, and there's one idea of struggling, and you can experience their struggling. What appears through your eyes as you remember the early lessons? I was like, pretty early, 16 or so. But I'm not alone in the effects of my seeing. I'm not alone in the effects of my thoughts. It's one mind connected. And so what happens is you start to recognize that what appears to be somebody suffering is just another, it's your tail wagging. And you see and understand the solution for what appears to be them now as easily as you see and remember the solution for yourself. There is not another struggling person. Just indeed, like you were not a separate struggling person. And now you can map it all the way back to the awakening awareness of oneness, which we call Jesus, the separate mind that actually abides to one, reflects through all mind. You are now carrying that with your spiritual awakening. You can now look at another person suffering and you can do the healing. I know it sounds crazy, but of course, with one mind, you cannot see sickness over there. If you do, then you're not healed. And you will reinforce that thought and you will feel sorry for them. I don't think Emily felt sorry for that person on the table. She didn't. She actually felt a sharing and a oneness. And I'll tell you, a little bit of Emily's light spread throughout the entire room. Because she was not hiding. She was not afraid. When you witness somebody else suffering, it's scary. Because you think I know how that feels and it hurts and it's bad and I don't want me to be next. That's not what Emily said, is it? You saw how easily she spoke. She was free. And this is a clue.
Okay, I'm very fuzzy about all this because what I did hear is that, you know, the idea that there's no world out there because there's only one mind. So let's say someone is going through some huge health issues, right? Like cancer. And I see them in tremendous pain and confusion and lost. So I understand the feeling of hopelessness that I am projecting it out to her, and I can be responsible about doing my own healing. However, I'm not getting the connection. Is she still is in tremendous pain and suffering?
You got a little piece of that backwards.
Okay.
When you said you were projecting the suffering out to her, the you that you're talking about is the you you're talking in that sentence is the unhealed mind.
Yeah, I get that.
Right? And so actually, you're projecting it not out to her, you're projecting it into you.
Mm-hmm.
It's already dreamt. Her suffering is already dreamed in place to you, the one who needs to heal. The appearance of two has already occurred. You see, the part of your, and I will stop because it's going to get pretty deep in the metaphysics we don't need to go into, but the part of your dream that you're already completely committed to is time. Already. And space. Already. This dream, this movie has already been acted, played, scripted, staged, filmed, and you're watching it. Course describes it this way in lesson 158. It says, you but rehearse a dream that has long gone by. And you are rehearsing it. And this is how I say that. Okay. So here's another way to look at it. A tree has a trunk and then it has smaller branches and the branches get smaller, 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 smaller until finally you get leaves on the end. The one called Masako, who is observing another leaf suffering and turning brown around the edges and ready to fall dead to cancer. That leaf is not going to change the other leaf, the existence of it. It's already committed at that level, see? At that level. You're awakening. The leaf does not awaken and become the tree.
All right, Andrew, let me think about this.
Say that again. You gotta, I'm telling you, it's deep. It's very deep. I know I'm guilty because I'm the one who mentioned it, but it is great news. Yeah.
Just say that last line again. The leaf, the tree, the leaf thing. What did you just say?
Okay.
The leaf doesn't become the tree.
Yeah, the leaf does not, the leaf as a leaf does not become the tree. The tree-ness of the leaf. You awaken from the leaf as the tree. Do not awaken as a tree, as a leaf back into the tree and say, oh, now I'm a leaf who is a tree. No. You awaken from the leaf and say, I am tree. And leaves are part of trees. Oh, it's still one tree. It has lots of leaves and branches. But it's one tree, right? It was always one tree. Many leaves, one tree. You see? For a moment, just for a moment, during your awakening, maybe prior to your awakening, it was one leaf and everything else. Completely alone. Completely alone.
Andrew?
Yes.
I don't want this. I want to share an experience, and this is before I was really studying The Course in Miracles. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was reading it. I had been reading it for a while and stuff, but I wasn't really, really digesting it. And so I didn't relate it to The Course in Miracles. But I was sharing it because I want to see how this fits in with what you're talking about. And perhaps it'll be helpful to others. I don't know. But so I was teaching a little class with some parents, and one of the young women, attractive young woman who wanted to be an actress, had gone down to Hollywood. She was telling this story. She's going down to Hollywood. She got an opportunity to meet with a producer, and she gets in his office. She's all excited because she's going to get an opportunity, and he puts some moves on her. And I'm there, and my point of view was kind of judgmental, like, okay, well, how did you make this happen? You know, it was real egoic kind of judgmental kind of thing. But then by grace, really, all of a sudden I found myself inside of her looking at what she was talking about or looking with her. And all I can say about that I remember was just how comforting it was. Yeah, it was just comforting. It was like love. And I didn't put those words on it, but as I recall, that's just how it felt. And is that kind of what we're talking about here?
Yes, Don, it is. Because this is the entrance of that door I call compassion.
Right.
Not to judge her or even guess, but to actually abide from her innocent perspective at that moment. Suddenly you get it. Now you understand. Yeah. Anytime you've made a mistake in your life, you should do the same thing and say, you know what? I couldn't have done better. She couldn't have done different than she did.
Right.
Because she was 21 years old trying to make it in Hollywood, whatever. Or you dropped the milk in the kitchen yesterday. You had the glass of milk and you grabbed it too quickly because you wanted to get back to your TV show before the commercial ended, and you dropped the milk. Bang, all over the kitchen floor. It went under the refrigerator. That's where the milk went. It splashed under the refrigerator. Is that going to smell? Are you going to have to move the refrigerator? How bad is it? Should you move? But you couldn't have done any differently. Hmm. You see, because that's exactly what happened. Now you have compassion with yourself. You don't need to yell at yourself, swear at yourself. You get it. You're in a hurry. That's all. That's all. That's all. Same with everybody else who ever did anything that you disagreed with.
The beauty of that experience, part of the element of it that I think is beautiful, is that, you know, it was before I would have been talking necessarily about compassion or trying to be compassionate. I wasn't trying to be compassionate. It was like by grace. You know, I guess I
by grace, he says.
Yeah, it was by grace. Yeah, and I was grateful. Anyway, okay. Thank you for...
Don, by grace. That's a beautiful phrase. Allow grace, Don. Allow grace. By grace comes all blessings. Angels, you know, these things that happen in your life that are just so helpful. They're like grace. Good, good. Beautiful, beautiful. Jacqueline. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to say something to Don. I've noticed that when you've talked about these, what we would maybe we would call holy incense, you use that word grace other times too. And I know we each kind of have sometimes a unique way that holy incense come to us. And I'm just seeing that grace is a way that the holy incense comes to you. It's yours. I mean, that other people probably have it that way too, but not all of us. We all have, you know, it comes to me in different ways. And I don't use the word grace. I'm grateful. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. I think that's your doorway to holy incenses, is that grace, opening to grace.
Thank you. Thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful. Okay, you ready? Let's go to page 460 in the text. Yes, 460 in the text. Chapter 21. And we're looking at that paragraph at the top of the page, paragraph 5. Are you there, Tim? Okay. He is.
Yep.
Tim, would you... Oh, we're both doing your mute at the same... Would you read for us paragraph 5 on page 460 in the text, which is... Are you on my browser again?
The body does not separate you from your brother.
Bingo.
And if you think it does, you are insane. But madness has a purpose and believes it also has the means to make its purpose real. To see the body as a barrier between what reason tells you must be joined must be insane. Nor could you see it if you heard the voice of reason. What can there be that stands between what is continuous? And if there is nothing in between, how can what enters part be kept away from other parts? Reason would tell you this, but think what you must recognize if it be so.
He's laying down the challenge for you to actually try to make sense of that paragraph and join and say, well, what could there be apart from what is continuous? It's all one. So it must be all accessible. And so this will be the healing of sickness or, you know, sin or this devotion to separation. So Jacqueline, I got your mute. Would you also, would you read for us the next paragraph 6?
If you choose sin instead of healing...
Now remember, sin in the Course of Miracles is separation, essentially, or loss, or death, or it's just it's a handy little three-letter word that means miss the truth. Go ahead.
If you choose sin instead of healing, you would condemn the Son of God to what can never be corrected. You tell him by your choice that he is damned, separate from you and from his Father forever, without a hope of safe return. You teach him this, and you will learn of him exactly what you taught. For you can teach him only that he is as you would have him, and what you choose he be is but your choice for you. Yet think not this is fearful. That you are joined to him is but a fact, not an interpretation. How can a fact be fearful unless it disagrees with what you hold more dear than truth? Reason will tell you that this fact is your release.
That deserves an amen right there.
Amen.
Reason will tell you that one is one. And that even though your brother appears to be separate, he's still one. And all you have to do is accept that in some small eternal way. And it's your whole way out. Now, don't miss that what we read earlier, that your ego has a purpose for seeing your brother as separate, seeing suffering over there. It has a purpose for that. But you are now denying that purpose. You're letting it go. You're denying its validity. Oneness is now your purpose. And now the very same thing that was used to make things more feel more separate can be used to join them. This is what the Holy Spirit is for, to reinterpret what looked separate. And now they have you little experiences of joining here and there. This little, first a little, and then they get bigger. At first they're insignificant, and then they get more significant. First they're interesting, and then they're defining. This is the way your spiritual progression goes. Emily had a beautiful experience, and she taught all of us how beautiful. How wouldn't everybody like to feel as free as she did when you hear and see and witness suffering in the world? She is our teacher tonight. She simply experienced that. She simply let go of the barriers for a moment. And you better believe it, that her light was in the room, and that her light was present in that room. She didn't even know it. She was like, whoa, what happened? Yeah. This is how he just a little slowly by surely. Yes, Lan. Hold on, I got your mute. Go. Wait. Wait. Go.
Okay. You know, the other way you can look at it is what you give, you receive. So if you look at someone's pain and say, oh, that's painful for them, you're giving the pain back to them.
Bingo. And to you. First to you.
Yeah,
first to you.
Absolutely. First to me, and then I'm feeling it back.
Say that again. Luann, say that again.
Basically what, okay, anything that you feel about somebody else, you are feeling it. If you're feeling somebody else's pain, you're feeling it, right? But if you're feeling it, you're giving it back to them because we're all of one mind. If you're feeling love for somebody, then they're feeling it too from you, because love also means we're in we are of one mind. So what?
Not alone the effects of your thoughts, nor the effects of your seeing. And everything transforms depending on from what your perspective is. Everything transforms. Your experience of your life transforms depending on your perspective.
Now, the only thing that I'm not quite sure about is if, for instance, in Emily's case, she had started feeling the person's pain instead of just being with it. Well, let me give you a different example. I don't like that one very much for myself. If I send somebody, if I have a judgment about them, that's a negative thing, no matter what they're doing.
Yep.
I have something about it. So if I'm doing that, they are feeling my judgment, and it becomes a little bit of a judgment of themselves. Did I do that right? How did this come about? You know, why would I do that kind of thing? So it's like whatever we think of anybody else, but they also might not be them that's doing it. Might be somebody else in the room or someplace else in New Zealand.
And then you discover so many times when you go to reconcile these things that they never even had that thought in the first place. It was you the whole time. Mm-hmm. How many times you went to go reconcile something with a best friend? You know what? It's been months, but I really want to apologize for something I said. What? I didn't even know you said it. Right? It's in your head. It's in your head. It's in your head.
When you say it to them, then they say, oh, you know.
And they say, oh, you said that? That's in your head too. You see, it's all a matter of presence of mind. When you go to make a sincere apology, they won't even remember what you said. They'll just say, wow, thank you. I appreciate you coming and saying that because it was sincere. See, if you're just trying not to feel guilty, they'll feel an attack. But if you really, really do say, make an apology, it's saying, I love you. And nobody's going to miss that. Remember, is it Maya Angelou? somebody famous said, you won't remember specifically what people said to you, but you will always remember how they made you feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, turn to text page 39. Text page 39, front of your book, paragraph 4. Let's just start looking into some of the wisdom dropped on us by Jesus to help us get the perspective of what this oneness is. How does it manifest? Where is it going? What's another way to look at this impossible oneness when everything appears to be so separate? Here's a clue. Text page 39, paragraph 4, jump to the end of the paragraph to sentence 5, to be one is to be of one mind or will. Huge clue on how you can approach oneness in a differing situation. For example, in my example of Hollywood, if you just look at the building and the cameras, it's one will is to make a movie. If you look at the trailers behind the building, you can't tell which trailer is for Mary Poppins' character and which trailer is holding the actor for the Chainsaw Massacre. I can't tell. I have to wait until they go in and act out their parts. One will is make a movie. One mind is entertainment. Do you see how combining that is? Even though the manifestation, the outcome, is dramatically different if you put meaning on it. If you put meaning on it, if you put meaning on it. Lesson number one, Course in Miracles. Nothing I see means anything. I often say that first lesson is the last lesson. He cleverly starts he starts his workbook lessons with the final lesson. And you do all the other lessons so you can understand the first one. And get it and go, I get it. Look at, we're at the front of the book. So go to, I think it's Miracle Principle 14, page 4.
You don't mean the part of the book, you mean the part of the lessons.
Nope, this is the front of the text. It's page 4, so that's about, 20-30 pages in because of all the other little pages up there. Right after the introduction, the beginning of your text.
Isn't it one of the miracles?
It's a miracle principle. Okay. You see, miracles bear witness to truth. Good. Hope so. They are convincing because they arise from conviction. Look at the circle. They're convincing because they arise from conviction itself. You know, we could even capitalize that second conviction. Oneness is seen as one because it arises from a sense of oneness. Do you see the circle? This is what happened to Emily. Emily was in a state of oneness. Somehow, some way, with whatever they were doing on those tables, she slipped into oneness, relaxed. She did not do something. She undid the fascination with differences somehow. And she slipped into oneness. Source, remember, your perspective changes. And from where you see is from how you see it.
Andrew?
Yes.
We're on the page My eyes strayed to Miracle Principle 24, Sentence 1.
Read that whole one. I love that one.
Miracles enable you to heal the sick and raise the dead because you made sickness and death yourself and therefore can abolish both.
Well, there you go. Well, that's it. We're done. There it is. Jesus is just shortcutting it for you. That's it. You are the dreamer of the dream. The dream contains death and sickness, sure, but you dream that. The miracle returns you to your actual place. Well, that would take a miracle. Hey, David. Hi.
So, historically speaking, the reason, if we take it at its literal level, which is always dangerous, that Jesus was enabled to do miracles and heal the sick and raise the dead was because he understood he was the dreamer of the dream and was therefore able to change those elements that he was responsible for creating in the first place.
There is no limit to what your mind can do as it awakens and when it's lucid. And that is true. Okay.
Just a small detail.
Yeah, no, I love that. I mean, that's just cutting right to the bones right there, right in the front of the book. Because, you know, you pick up A Course in Miracles and you read Miracle Principle 24, you're like, what? I can raise the dead? Is that what this book is about?
Yeah, let's see this happen, right?
What?
Well, but it's let's see it happen. Go ahead, do it.
Yeah, right.
I'm watching.
Yeah. Well, that's the point of, I forget who was speaking earlier about that. You're not going to see healing happen outside you. When I say that you're going to heal others, you can actually do the healing for others. That's what I meant. Miracle Principle 24 is backing me up. It's not that you're going to walk into a cancer ward and start letting people out because they can suddenly walk. This is not the value of a miracle. Jesus stopped doing miracles. Did you know that? He was awakening like crazy, and he thought, oh my God, these miracles are backfiring. I'm trying to speak about the oneness of mind and how we're busy dreaming needlessly of suffering, and I'll prove it to you. And then people are lowering in from the ceiling saying, yeah, but you heal this guy first. Show us again, Jesus, how powerful you are and heal this poor suffering person. And then we'll listen. Just one more, please.
Or feed these 5,000.
Feed these 5,000. He had to run. He had to run because he was
on a boat, go across the lake at dusk.
He became unable to teach what he came to teach. The truth got smothered by the desire for healing the physical. He was no longer able to heal the spiritual, have spiritual gifts to give because people just wanted the physical gifts. You see, the miracles are backfiring.
That's an interesting theology. I haven't heard it expressed that way. And it seems to me to be worth consideration.
He had to hide. He had to change towns where he was not recognized. And then he could begin to teach again.
That's my understanding of it.
Yeah. We digress a little bit, but that's fun. That's why it's just the whole physical thing is not the goal with A Course in Miracles. It is not. But your freedom wouldn't be anyway in the physical. You can always come back for physical as a free mind. And it's chapter 14 talks about that, being able to return back to the dream state, but awake. It talks about that, but that's not our function tonight. I wanted to get you to a few more things. We have a couple of minutes. How about this one? Turn to the workbook, page 323. You can drop this page. We're not going to come back to anything. Workbook 323. Now you're in the back of the book. You're in the lessons, Luann. Okay. Workbook 323. And look at paragraph 5. Another way of quickly distilling in just a few words what really can't be spoken of. It can only be experienced, but a sentence like this, you could just drop the whole rest of that lesson. It's a wonderful lesson, really. But you know what? I recommend to people when you're doing their lessons for the second or third or fourth time, and you hit a sentence like this and it stirs you, that's your lesson for the day. Forget the rest of the lesson. Take this sentence all day and continue to celebrate it until you own it. This is workbook 323, paragraph 5, sentence 1. Oneness is simply the idea God is. That one sentence both defines God and defines oneness. Wow. Holy cannoli. So, Emily, I got your mute. Would you read for us the whole paragraph?
Oneness is simply the idea God is, and in his being, he encompasses all things. No mind holds anything but him. We say God is, and then we cease to speak, for in that knowledge, words are meaningless. There are no lips to speak them, and no part of mind sufficiently distinct to feel that it is now aware of something not itself.
Read that sentence again. It's a predictive and prescriptive in a single sentence. It's a directive and a command and a celebration all in one sentence. Please read it again.
There are no lips to speak them, and no part of mind sufficiently distinct to feel that it is now aware of something not itself. It has united with its source. And like its source itself, it merely is.
Just is. That's a wonderful, beautiful, complete meditation and meditation instruction. And wouldn't that be enough to practice for a whole day? But there's more. We have still a few more minutes, right? We do. Turn to workbook page 244. We just have two more minutes, but that's all we need. 244. This is part of the amazing lesson 132. The interesting thing about lesson 132 is it has this very short sentence that says, there is no world, period. That's the whole sentence. It's on the previous page. We're not studying that tonight. But it says, look, you know what? There is no, there is no world. Okay. But this we're looking at is paragraph 12.
On what page?
On page 244 in the workbook, in the lessons, in the back of your book, 244. Look at paragraph 12. And let's have Cecilia, can you read for us?
Yes. Release the world. Your real creations wait for this release to give you fatherhood. Not of illusions, but as God in truth. God shares his fatherhood with you who are his son, for he makes no distinctions in what is himself and what is still himself.
How about that wording?
Mm-hmm. Should I go on?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, what he creates is not apart from him. What he creates is not apart from him. And nowhere does the Father end. The Son begin as something separate from him. And nowhere does the Father end, the Son begin as something separate from him.
I got a spiritual awakening off of that sentence, and I thought, man, wow, wait, right. If God is and there's all is one and I appear to be separate, but still I'm really an extension of God. Nowhere does God end and I begin. If you trace the leaf back to where it attaches to the tree, there's not actually a separation. It's just tree. And it becomes somehow a branch. And if you keep going, the branch somehow becomes a bigger branch. And if you fall, it's still connected to the leaf where you're looking from. And that to the trunk and to the whole tree.
I didn't know where it was, but I was reading. I like to pick it up, open the book and see where it goes. And it was a page that I had a question mark about. What is it?
What? I lost you. Cecilia, would you read the first sentence of the next paragraph?
Sure. I just want to say that, you know, for me, what he creates is not apart from him. That is one sentence. That,
come on.
That is the oneness, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, that and that, yes, that's, yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. There is no world because it is a thought apart from God. There is no world because it is a thought apart from God and made to separate the Father and the Son and break away a part of God himself and thus destroy his wholeness. Can a world... Yeah.
You just got a description of what you are.
Mm-hmm.
A part of God. And God would not let go a part of God. That's enough right there to celebrate your being. Receive that gift. Take it with you tonight into sleep. That you are forever and always a part of God. And God would not ever possibly see a part apart from him. You are part of all that is forever and always. And you're just dreaming of for a short time. Being separate.
Hmm.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for studying A Course in Miracles with me. It's good work that we do. Thank you for joining on this. Let's do it again next week. And Happy New Year.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Andrew.
Good night,
everybody. Bye, everybody.
Good night. Good to see you all.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
Bye.